You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When the housing market crashed in 2008, it soon became apparent that the mortgage fraud committed by banks had done a lot of damage to the economy. But the big banks that committed most of the fraud were deemed too big to fail and offered bailouts and fines. On the other hand, Abacus Federal Savings Bank, a family-owned bank in Chinatown, was indicted and put on trial. In his latest documentary called Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, Steve James follows the owners, the Sung family, as they go through their five-year-long ordeal. It opens today at the IFC Center, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Steve James, along with two of the Sung family members, Vera and Jill, to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Steve, this seems to be a bit of a departure from your previous documentaries, mostly focused in Chicago. When did you first hear about the charges brought against Abacus Federal Savings Bank in New York's Chinatown and the Sung family?
Well, I did not hear about it from the news media because it wasn't really being covered here in New York, except in the Chinese American press. I heard about it through Mark Mitten, who's one of the producers and has been friends with the family for 12 years, I think, now, something like that.
So when you heard about it, you knew right away that this was going to make an interesting story?
Well, he started to tell me about it, and I was like, wait, what? This small bank is the bank? And because he'd known them for years and knew them to be fine, upstanding citizens, not just really good bankers, it boggled the mind. And so we came to New York and filmed for a few days, and from there we decided to make the film.
Now, Vera and Jill, I'm just going to throw out questions, and each of you can decide which one to answer. When did your father, Thomas Sung, start Abacus Federal Savings Bank?
In 1984.
And he was a practicing lawyer.
Yes, he was actually an immigration lawyer, and he had developed a lot of loyalty and devotion in the community because of the services he brought a lot of the people and brought them into the legal system as immigrants.
And then why did he decide to switch over to banking? That's a big leap, isn't it?
Well, after he serviced a lot of the immigrants and gave them status, helped them attain their status here in the United States, a lot of them actually went on to form businesses. He represented with their businesses, and then they went in to buy real estate and needed mortgages to buy their homes.
Well, I used to live in Chinatown, and what I remember is there were a lot of banks, mostly branches of the big banks. Were they not doing the job?
What he tells us is that they would take all the deposits from the community, but when it came time for them to come and borrow money, they would not lend out, either because they couldn't speak the language or communicate with a lot of the members of this community.
Now, he was a lawyer. Didn't most of the family wind up going to law school?
Yes. Three out of the four
the two of
children,
you?
Yes, includes two of us, went to law school and became lawyers.
Now, how old was your father when he came to the United States? And he came from Shanghai?
He was born in Shanghai and then grew up in Chongqing. And then he eventually came over to the United States. I believe he was about 16 or 17
yes.
years old.
Yes.
And then how old were the two of you when he decided to start the bank?
I remember clearly I was just beginning college.
Mm-hmm. And I was in high school.
Yeah. And did you know at some point or other you would wind up working at the bank?
Absolutely not, actually.
Your mother didn't want you to hear that.
That's something that we didn't think about to be part of.
Now, how far along in the story, Steve, was it by the time that you met the Sung family?
I met them right before the trial. It was really when the trial was imminent that I first heard about this story.
And heard about Ken Yu.
Yes.
Who was Ken Yu?
You're asking me?
Well, any of you.
You guys
I'm sure
are
you all know the answers.
Ken Yu was a former loan officer at our bank.
And how long had he been working at Abacus?
About 4 or 5 years.
He is the one who closed the questionable mortgage deals that got you in trouble?
The one that – he was the infamous one that started us looking at the case was him. That was his loan.
What was the standard procedure for closing a deal?
A regular real estate closing when you represent the bank is essentially having the borrowers sign documents such as the mortgage and the note, and also to understand all the closing costs associated with the mortgage. And you do a closing statement, a settlement statement.
So there's a lot of paperwork involved.
A lot of paperwork.
Jill, when did you first realize that Ken was creating faulty loans?
Well, Vera alerted to me at a closing that something was wrong. One of the borrower's attorney had complained that money that was being disclosed as being paid did not reflect money that the borrower had given Ken. And so that was the first alarm that we had.
And then didn't you fire him as soon as you realized what
yes,
he was doing?
Yes, within 24 business hours we fired him.
Did you find out whether other employees had also been involved in it?
Well, as soon as we fired him and found out about what he was doing, actually we weren't quite sure exactly what he was doing. We started an internal investigation and reported this to law enforcement.
What about Fannie Mae? Because these loans were all sold to Fannie Mae.
Yes, we reported what we were finding to Fannie Mae.
What happened after you reported on Ken Yu? Did the cops come? Did they arrest him?
No, we fired him, and so we kind of just kicked him out of the bank, and we weren't sure what happened to him after that. But we were continuing our internal investigation very heavily during this whole time.
And were you surprised when the case suddenly shifted from Ken Yu to your family?
Yes. It was unbelievable to me that this was happening. And we actually didn't think it was happening for a period of time. And we were very open and very cooperative. We didn't have an attorney representing us as we were sharing information to the DA's office.
And you were all lawyers.
Yeah,
did you feel you needed to hire an attorney?
Not at that moment. No. And actually, as a former prosecutor, I thought that they were going to help us figure out what was going on and do the right thing in terms of trying to punish the person who had done bad things.
You had worked in the DA's office?
I actually did not work at the Manhattan District DA's office.
So you had
that
worked
was Chanterelle.
But a number of you had worked as prosecutors.
Yes.
So you probably had some pretty good insight into the whole process.
Had insight as to what should happen.
Who had profited from the loans? Was it exclusively Ken Yu?
No. The loans, when we lend the money out, we would then sell them to Fannie Mae. And so Fannie Mae is the investor, and they would profit from the loan, which is basically the interest that's being paid.
Although at the trial, wasn't Fannie Mae described as a victim of this whole thing? Despite the fact that they were making profit on them?
Yes.
That's the irony.
Yes.
One of the ironies of this story. I'm speaking with two members of the Sung family, which own the Abacus Savings Bank. Abacus Small Enough to Jail is the name of a film from Steve James, which opens today at the IFC Center. Got a wonderful review in the Times as well. So let's get to the DA. What did Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. charge the bank and your family with?
They charged the bank with 180 counts, mortgage fraud, falsification of business documents, as well as conspiracy. And there was actually a charge that involved the securities law of New York State.
And they didn't charge us individually. They charged the corporation.
But you already had a paper trail to prove that you had been trying to deal with it and that you had turned Ken Yu in. So why would they even go after you?
That is something that we did not understand at all.
This is the multimillion dollar question
right.
here.
Yes. I mean, there's so many reasons that could be behind it. We've talked about it as a family, but one of them we think is personal political ambition. A political office like that would have interest in flexing their muscle and going after something that they could then hang up like a pelt that they had hunted on and basically say that they were able to do something that someone else wasn't able to do.
Well, I would have thought that would have meant Bank of America or Wells Fargo.
No. Bank of America, Wells Fargo has resources.
No, well, and I think there are reasons, I think, for that. One being that when it came to the big banks, the feds were in control of the prosecution of those big banks. So this was the case where you had a small bank in New York City where Cyrus Vance Jr. could kind of call the shots on what happened there, even though he invited feds down for the spectacle of the indictment, which really was a spectacle. And I think that, you know, when they chained together all these former employees and marched them down the hall in front of the news media, and in his indictment when he says that this is the kind of fraud that was part of the cause of the 2008 crisis, which was completely false, I think that's where his motives were revealed.
Was actually involved in all of this fraud?
Actually, the indictment listed 32 loans.
Yeah.
Right, which is
so that brought down the American economic system in the year 2008.
Well, and those 32 loans all performed.
Now, Vera, weren't you directly accused of having orchestrated this scheme and conspiring with Ken Yu?
No.
Oh.
But in the trial, there was one question.
Oh, yeah. Okay. In terms of the trial, there is something called a board of approval director form that we need to sign. So as a director, I had approved of that loan, but we never take a look at the underlying documents, and any of the underlying documents actually came after the actual approval of that loan.
Wasn't the seating chart of the bank cited?
Yes, it was, and we actually thought that was very unfair and actually ridiculous in a sense, in that, as Ken Yu stated at trial, he would actually meet loan officers outside of the bank.
Customers,
outside of the bank. And as a matter of fact, one of the borrowers, when he exchanged money and for a gift letter, that was done in the lobby of the bank. So it wasn't done on that floor.
And he was doing that because he actually was selling these loans and pocketing some of the money? He didn't want to do that in the bank proper?
It's not clear what he was doing 100%. It's actually he's still a mystery to us of what the damage he was doing, but he definitely was doing something not right, and so he did not want other people to see what he was doing, so he kept his actions away.
How did the DA's office go about arresting employees of the bank, and who was arrested?
We had a couple underwriters arrested, a lot of loan officers arrested, and processors were arrested, and what we were told...
Were they his supervisors?
No. Well, only one was a supervisor, and the other one was the head of underwriting who did not supervise him.
The one chief credit officer, right. Yu Wa-Wong, Raymond Tam, was loan supervisor. They'd already been charged at that point, but then they were arrested again?
Yes, they were arrested again a couple of weeks later. They were arrested first underneath initial indictment, and then they were arrested again, and that's where they brought them in to be marched through the halls in the chains with the other defendants.
Why hadn't they realized Ken Yu was selling faulty loans and pocketing money?
Oh, well, in the trial, there was a lot of evidence that was given over to us. It's required by law that prosecutors share evidence that they have through subpoena power to the defense. And it was pretty clear to our defense team that they did have information about this, but they chose to ignore it.
Now, what kind of impact was this having on the bank's reputation in Chinatown? There's always that Asian sense of losing face.
Correct. It's not a good thing, and it does affect people's perception. However, we did feel that the community did support us and that they continue to bank with us. And it's actually quite incredible that we survived an indictment. Generally speaking, a bank, well, actually, we don't know of any bank who actually survives an indictment. They pretty much collapse afterwards.
Perhaps because you were offering services that other banks weren't offering.
Right.
Chinese community uses a bank differently than most other communities.
Well, we've as a community bank, we had a lot of roots in the community. My father, doing through his other, as an immigration lawyer, also had developed a lot of loyalty and trust within the community. And so when this happened and my father went ahead of it, he made the announcement before Cy Vance had made the announcement. He was able to calm the community to some extent because of that trust and reputation, loyalty that had been built over the years.
Steve, what was the bank's default rate?
Well, my understanding is that it's 1/20th the national average. So they have one of the lowest default rates of any bank in the United States.
So of 3,000 loans sold to Fannie Mae, how many were in default?
Nine.
That is pretty low.
Yes, it's very low.
And yet that was enough to get the bank raided and people arrested?
Seems unbelievable.
Yeah.
And as we said, Fannie Mae actually made money on those loans. Who else? Did anybody else make money on them other than KenU?
We do service the loans. That's one of the things we do when we sell to Fannie Mae. We hold the loan. We service the loan. And so we get some servicing fees, but that is, in the trial was shown, that's nominal compared to what the investor makes Fannie Mae.
We should all be victims like Fannie Mae, yeah. I think.
Steve, do you know if any other national banks or any other banks in the United States have been indicted for mortgage fraud in relation to the 2008 housing crisis?
None have been. What happened with the big banks is that despite all that they did is that they were offered the opportunity to pay large fines and escape any kind of criminal indictment as institutions.
Were you offered the opportunity to just pay a large fine?
No, we were not offered the opportunity just to pay a large fine. We were offered the opportunity to plead to a felony. We basically label our own selves criminals and then pay a fine. So we could not do that.
Although Cyrus Vance rejects the idea that there was a racial aspect to the prosecution, he says at one point in your film, "I felt that our handling of the bank was consistent with how we would have handled the bank if we were investigating a bank that serviced a South American community or the Indian community." He seems to be totally oblivious to what he's saying there.
Yeah, he seemed kind of oblivious. Well, you know, he was very revealing. When we finally got the interview with Cyrus Vance Jr. after the trial had concluded, he seemed pretty oblivious to a lot of what he had to say. And I found it very revealing, which is one of the reasons why we keep a lot of his comments intact in the film, because the one thing we wanted to make sure was is that no one watching this film could accuse us of manipulating his comments to say something that he didn't mean.
Were you surprised when he agreed to participate?
I was surprised. But I think that part of what really helped that to happen was the fact that we had made such a concerted effort since the beginning of our filming to involve and want to hear their side of the case. And I think it also helped that at the point near the end of the process, Frontline became a partner in this film. And Frontline's reputation for journalism came with a certain amount of respect and I think a certain amount of fear that you don't want to be saying no to Frontline where you might more easily say no to me as an individual filmmaker.
Because in the middle of the film, you would have said, "We asked Cyrus Vance to..."
Repeatedly.
And he kept on turning us down.
Yes.
And that would have been very embarrassing. Do you think he has national ambitions?
I have no idea if he has national ambitions.
But... I'm not going to reveal what happened because part of the fun of watching this film, if you want to call it fun, and maybe I use the wrong word there, but the mystery that is involved is how the whole thing is going to work out, and that would be a terrible spoiler. But the film is really fabulous, and Steve James and members of the Sung family will be appearing at the IFC Center tonight and tomorrow night after the 6:20 screenings, and they'll introduce the 8:25 screenings. And then on Sunday, members of the Sung family will be at the IFC Center after the 4:15 screening. Are we ever going to see this on TV since it was also a Frontline project?
Yes. Eventually on Frontline, but so far in the future, you should come out this weekend and see it.
How are your parents doing now?
They're great. Thank you so much for asking.
They're happy. They're doing well.
And thank you all so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Steve James, Vera Sung, Jill Sung. The film Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, opens today at the IFC Center in Greenwich Village.